Your first job can leave a lasting impression on you. Paper route, waitress, stock boy, well, how about mortician's assistant? At age 15, Cherie Booker began working at her local mortuary in one of Baltimore's rougher neighborhoods. Her new memoir, 9 Years Under, chronicles her time at the Wiley Funeral Home. Charles Monroe Kane wanted to know what it was like to come of age in a funeral home.
I remember when I was 15, dead bodies to me were just gross and freaky, you know what I mean? Like, did you think that at first?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I did not want to see a dead body. In fact, my dad, he was a police officer in Baltimore, and he didn't mind me working at the funeral home. His one rule was, whatever you do, do not go in the basement where they actually embalm the bodies. That was his number one rule. You can do anything else there. You can answer the phones. You can answer the doors. You can type death certificates. Whatever you do, do not go in that basement. And you know what ended up happening, right?
You went in the basement, right?
Eventually I did.
What happened when you went down the basement?
My first time in the basement, oh my goodness, Mr. Wally called me down. That was my boss, Mr. Wally. He called me down into the basement, and he wanted me to wipe down a casket. The only thing was, he was in the next room that did not have a door, and he was actually embalming a body. So I'm trying my best to just stare at this casket that I'm wiping the dust off of, but I keep looking at this body. I'm intrigued. I need to know what's going on. My first case was a young man who was a suicide victim, gunshot wound to the head. He had just come in from the medical examiner's office. Most gruesome, horrifying scene that I ever saw in my life, but I could not look away. I wanted more. And ever after that moment, I found a way to get in the basement every chance that I could.
You know, it seems to me that funeral directors in the African-American community are different than funeral directors in the white community. They're held to a higher regard, almost a high level of respect, like a preacher. Is that true? Did I get that right from reading your book?
Absolutely. You know, the funeral business is one of the most segregated businesses in the world. And part of the reason that we're segregated is because during slavery, during the civil rights movement, black bodies weren't treated. They weren't respected the way that they should be respected. And so what happened was there was this divide. So a lot of times if a black family had to go to a white funeral home, they would have to enter through the back, or, you know, they would do the ceremonial things outside. And sometimes they abused the bodies. And so in the African-American community, a lot of preachers, they started opening funeral homes. So they are regarded in a very high manner in the African-American community.
Now, of course, one of the things going on in that part of Baltimore and that you would see in the funeral home is death. And not just death of grandma passing away, but death of young black men killing each other. Were you ready for that?
I wasn't. I wasn't ready for that. There were a lot of homicides. And I say in the book, you know, young men that I should have been dating, here they are lying in a casket in front of me. That was hard for me. That was hard for me to see. I dealt with a lot of families. I worked there for 9 years. I talked to a lot of families. I comforted a lot of families. But whenever it was a homicide, I just could not rationalize that. That's just one thing that I will never, ever understand, how someone can take someone else's life. Everything else I could come up with a reason for, you know, a car accident. Well, God, you know, he did it that way because, or, you know, heart attack. Well, this was, you know, this was the way he was supposed to go. Homicide, I had no words at all.
When you look at your work there, how did gang and drug culture, how did it affect your work? I mean, other than obviously bringing in bodies, how else did it affect what you did? I mean, was it a part of the culture where you were as well?
It wasn't a part of the culture, but we did have a few instances where I remember going to work one day and we actually had a shootout, a drive-by shooting at the funeral home. So I'm at work, we have a viewing, there's a body on view, a young man. Next thing we know, we hear people running up the stairs, they're screaming, they're shouting. We're like, what's going on? Someone came through the block and literally shot out the windows of the funeral home.
Wow.
I think they were trying to get this young man's brother or something of that nature. I don't know the specific details.
You know, I can't help but say, I mean, a 16, 17, 18-year-old young woman, I forget how young you were when you did this stuff and the observations you're making, but you came of age during this time. And for example, you did these things that all teenagers do, including dating. You dated a man named Ahmad. Tell me about him and your experience of dating him while working at the funeral home.
I met this guy and he kind of swept me off my feet. He told me he worked for the Coke company, and I believe that he did. I would later find out that he was actually a drug dealer. And it was very scary for me once I found that out, because I knew that I was seeing a lot of young men who were involved in the drug business. That's who we were actually burying. And so I was very scared for Ahmad that, you know, he may be the next person that we bury. Yeah, that was tough.
Can you read something for me? It's from 178 about your time with him.
The longer I dated Ahmad, the more I worried that one day his name would be in the first column of the clipboard. His main headquarters wasn't far from the funeral home. I would panic if I didn't hear from him for a few days. I couldn't help but think that the cops would find him in some abandoned parking lot, stuffed into his trunk, his life taken over a petty altercation about money or dope, and his body filled with holes. Sometimes when I looked at him, I could see his face bloated in a casket. I'd watch him sleep, with his neck hidden beneath his chin, and picture those corpse faces that I saw every day. He slept with a gun under his pillow, and whenever he heard a car drive by, he'd jump up and peek through the Venetian blinds to make sure it wasn't someone coming for him. He knew he was playing Russian roulette, and I knew it too. I was just infatuated. He was strong and dangerous, but every day I saw a dangerously strong man stretched out after being slaughtered in the streets. The saying, "You'll end up dead or in jail," was more than just a saying. It was reality. And no matter how many funerals the men of Baltimore attended, they lived each day like it was their last, patiently waiting their turn.
Oh, my God. You know, when I hear you read that, it breaks my heart. Not for him, for you.
Yeah.
You learned a lot, and there's nothing wrong with gaining that knowledge, but it's almost like, is it worth it for you? Like, do you look back at that and be like, I'm traumatized? Do you look back at that and say, I survived? Do you look back at that and say, you know, I'm glad it made me who I am today?
A little of all three. I think that now that I'm older, and I started working there when I was 15. I'm 32 now. And looking back, I think that was tough. Just looking back, thinking of all the things that I saw and all of the people that we had to bury.
Can you share with us from your writings now, all these years later, of something that you've done to write about this time?
I love to. I breathe today. I breathe the breath of refreshment, a breath of realization, a breath of thanksgiving. And I realize that breathing is much more refreshing, definitely a blessing, and I am grateful for my breath because someone stopped breathing today. And so I breathe a breath of sincere satisfaction and relief that they will rest in peace. Someone else is breathing artificial, inauthentic, unnatural breaths, and it's killing them softly. Someone's breathing is controlled by machines of forced life support, and their life is cut short because they thought a man-made machine could save them. And I breathe, and I breathe, and I breathe, because I thought that I would never breathe again. And so I breathe for every sister that stopped breathing at the hands of some trifling man. I breathe for every child that never breathed because a selfish mother sacrificed her seed. I breathe for every punctured lung injured at the hands of envious, ungodly spirits. I breathe for every lung that collapsed from carrying burdens from one lung to the next. I breathe for every asthmatic lung that had the wind knocked out of it. I breathe for every short-lived conversation. I breathe for every long-winded preacher. I breathe for everyone that's waiting to exhale. I inhale and I breathe and I breathe and I breathe and I breathe and I breathe.
Wow, that's amazing. Thank you. You know,
Thank you.
I'm struck. And I forget this, that being a funeral director, you could look at it as a morose thing, right? But also, it's a ministry.
It is. And that was the most important thing for me. I understood that I was able to serve people. And I was able to serve the grieving people of Baltimore. And that meant a lot to me. It really did.
Sheree Booker's memoir about her time working at the funeral home is called 9 Years Under, Coming of Age in an Inner City Funeral Home. Charles Monroe Kane talked with her.